show changes. All I see is racist faces. Misplaced hate makes disgraces to races. I wonder what it takes to make this one better place. Let's erase the wasted. Take the evil out the people that be acting right, because both black and white is smoking crack tonight. And only time we chill is when we kill each other. It takes skill to be real, time to heal each other. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by the great Early Stoppage, we welcome you. This is something we hope to give you that you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin. I'll be joined, as always, by Craig Allen of Fight Night Picks. On this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk about Jorge Masvidal's call-out, Dana White's son, DC versus The Natural, and the future of one championship. We begin with Joe Silva. Craig, for some time we thought Joe Silva and Dana White were good cop, bad cop. Well, it turns out Dana White is Emperor Palpatine and Joe Silva is Darth Vader. Doing Dana's bidding is in some unconscionable ways, and that ever-present smile was just for the cameras. Several fighters, including Gray Maynard, Mike Pierce, John Fitch, Hector Lombard, and Eddie Alvarez have all come out saying that Silva was somewhere between flat-out disrespectful to threatening to cut guys who didn't take pay cuts. Craig, Silva's in the Hall of Fame, which ain't saying much. But what are your thoughts on hashtag Joe Silva stories?
John, it's good to see you this week. thanks for bringing me on. What do I make of it? Well, Hector Lombard's biggest post this week was where he knocked a guy out sparring that came into the gym talking smack. So that's my Hector Lombard tidbit for the week. As far as Joe Silva's concerned, yeah, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He made the UFC a lot of money, and I think that's a position that Dana White, Chael Sonnen, and a lot of the talking heads, and I know we're going to get into that a little bit later on, but that's kind of the stance that they're going to take, whereas everybody that was duped or done wrong, the Gray Maynards, Mike Pierce, was it Sam Stout? Was he the fighter that said he got like 2-2? Yeah, so that's what those guys are going to say. There's a few really big names, like Gray Maynard, obviously the big fights with Frankie Edgar. John Fitch, had some really big fights at welterweight with the UFC and then moved on, of course, WSOF, Bellator, what have you. Eddie Alvarez is kind of the most curious case here because he's probably the most recent guy. I mean, yeah, Hector Lombard, but if you're Hector Lombard, man, people had big expectations for you coming from Bellator. Like, he was an absolute force, and he came into the UFC and he was not, like, they were given or sold a bill of goods, and they did not receive on that one. Whereas Eddie Alvarez came from Bellator and had an amazing run and became UFC lightweight champion, had that crazy fight against RDA. And when I read his tweets, that was kind of the one that, I don't know if you could say hit home, but that was the one that I went, whoa, okay, yeah. All right, maybe there's some legitimacy here, because you always have to take into effect, you know, when there's smoke, there's fire, and guys might embellish social media. But I definitely take a lot of these guys, you know, kind of at their word. And Joe Silva, I mean, Joe Silva back then, you're a fighter. You're Gray Maynard. You're on top of the world or very close to it. You know, Joe Silva does you wrong. What are you going to do? You're going to tell your manager? Are you going to have the opportunity to talk to Dana White about it? Probably not. Is he going to take your side of the story? Probably not. I mean, Joe Silva's there to make the company money. So what are my thoughts on this one? Shady guy. Doing his job, probably went over the line, doesn't work for them anymore. So there's a basis for a lot of this, but like, what's the recourse here? That's kind of my question.
Well, a lot of times with these things, and I don't want to compare this, which is what I always say right before I compare things, but this is nowhere near Me Too. This is nowhere near all the Black Lives Matter stuff that's going on right now. This is nowhere near the Bill Cosby stuff that went down. The comparison here is that once the floodgates are open, a lot of people are in the water, if you will. And I think that's why, that, to me, meaning it's not that I think that it's some sort of, you know, concerted effort to you know, discredit Dana White and or Joe Silva by all these guys sort of lying in unison. I think that it's just when Gray Maynard says something or John Fitch says something, maybe Hector Lombard's more apt to say something, or Eddie Alvarez more apt to say something, or honestly, what ends up happening is when Gray Maynard says something and Mike Pierce says something and John Fitch says something, reporters start asking. They weren't asking the question before, now they're asking. So you have a choice. You either protect Joe Silva or you're honest. And I think a lot of these guys were honest. I think this is the way that the UFC is going about suppressing fighter pay in a lot of ways and controlling the situation. I don't think it's the best business practice, but it's, well, let me just say this. I don't think it's the best ethical practice. It seems to be working out great as a business practice, but it depends on where you draw the line at business ethics, as they once said in Billy Madison. So what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it in the news right now. This is probably, it's the dominating headline we're talking about. It's start a show, but how often are we seeing Gray Maynard's name in the media in terms of MMA in 2020? You really weren't. And now all of a sudden he's on every single show. Maybe we should try and get him on. But the point being that Gray Maynard, John Fitch, Lombard, Alvarez, Stout, there's so many different stories. You have to, you know, you always have to take everything with a grain of salt. You weren't there, but those two guys were. I'd be interested to see what Joe Silva says on this one.
You know, you'll probably never hear it, what Joe Silva has to say on it, because he didn't talk much when he was around. But the other thing that I'll say is, just keep in mind, guys, there's a fine line between sour grapes and just being honest, right? Just because they're saying things now and these guys aren't in the good graces of the UFC, it doesn't mean it's necessarily sour grapes. Doesn't mean they have an agenda. It just means they don't have any incentive to protect Joe Silva anymore. That's the reason why they maybe are where other guys do. The guys that aren't talking right now may have had similar, you know, run-ins with Joe Silva, but they're still in the, you know, they're still in the promotion.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this one moves on. And to continue on with the rundown, John, Jorge Masvidal remains at odds with the UFC over his contract status. And this week he took it a step further. He went after the commentators, calling them white knights. And then Masvidal on Twitter said, "And for the white knights that have commentating jobs with the UFC, that say just fight, you guys should be embarrassed to call yourselves current or former fighters. Not one of you been doing it as long as me and like me. There's a reason you're commentating." John, who's he talking to here? And does he really have a point? Because in my mind, there's two people in particular.
I'll guess. So one I think would be Paul Felder. And the other would maybe be Michael Bisping. He's had some problems with Michael Bisping in the past. I would say that, well, in terms of if he's saying that they haven't been doing it as long as him or like him, those would be the only two I think that you could make an argument with. Although I think Bisping's been doing it for a while. DC's been doing it at a higher level. I don't know. So now you got me curious. Who are the two that you think?
To me, it's Cormier in particular. Cormier's been the most outspoken guy on ESPN, on the broadcast, whatever. And then the guy that I already brought up, and yeah, he actually did it longer, retired. But again, your guy, Chael Sonnen. I mean, are they grooming him for a spot? I don't know. But those two guys have kind of taken the position of, well, you know, you get what you get, you fight for what you get, and you should be happy with what you get.
Yeah, I agree. And obviously those guys have huge incentives. And a lot of people were speculating on Twitter today, or a few people were, about what's in it for Chael. Here's what's in it for Chael. In the past, he had been able to sort of take his relationship with when the UFC was on Fox, he was still on ESPN, right? So it was okay that he was a Bellator fighter and he was, you know, sort of not at odds with the UFC, but he's no longer in a promotion. Well, now the UFC's on ESPN. So, and not only is the UFC on ESPN, last time I checked, and I check every day, Submission Underground's on Fight Pass. So yes, Chael does have vested interest. And if you think more people are going to watch Submission Underground not on Fight Pass than on Fight Pass, you don't understand the market, because Chael it's very beneficial to Chael that Submission Underground is on Fight Pass. It's very beneficial to Chael that he is a UFC commentator. Now, could he still draw eyes without the UFC? Of course, he's Chael. I mean, his YouTube channel in and of itself is already enough of a juggernaut that if the UFC and Fight Pass, or I'm sorry, if ESPN and Fight Pass dropped in tomorrow, he'd be fine. But he's still in a much better position being, you know, it's better to be a friend of the UFC than a foe. And I think that's where Chael comes from. Obviously, Cormier is setting himself up for the long run, either in the UFC front office, ask Chuck Liddell how those jobs go. But, you know, in the front office, saying in the commentating booth, you know, he's got a lot of things that he wants to do. And I think he wants to stay. I think Cormier, honestly, I've said this before, I'm going to say it again, he wants to stay in the good graces of ESPN because, dude, someday Daniel Cormier is going to be on Good Morning America. I promise you that. He will be doing what Michael Strahan's doing. So, and all that is made easier being in the good graces of the UFC.
And I mean, you know, you talk about it. What's history going to remember? The time Daniel Cormier said, hey, pick up your socks. Don't have these conversations on social media. Have them behind closed doors. Or are they going to remember the championships, the commentating gigs, the wrestling? Like, what are people really going to remember? It's a story now. I don't know if the narrative's going to continue.
Well, but in fairness, there's two parts to this question, and we've really only focused on the one, meaning, is it in the best interest of Cormier and Chael to say what they're saying? Okay, we've established that. Now, does Masvidal have a point in what he's saying with them? Yes, he's calling them out for being company men, and he's saying, listen, I'm trying to make my path here, right? And Cormier says, or he's been saying for the past couple weeks, listen, the direct approach is the best. I think Jorge Masvidal is being pretty direct. He's saying, I got paid more to fight for a fake belt than you're paying me to fight for a real belt. That doesn't make sense to me. So I do think that, you know, I tweeted about a week ago, the reason why there'll never be a fighters union is because there's always going to be Gilbert Burns's guys willing to take the title shot when others won't. Well, there's always going to be Daniel Cormier's. There's always going to be, and we talked about this, and we're kind of coming back to it, but all the best guys that you would want in that UFC fighters union or in the fighters union are all commentators. So I'm not saying the UFC and ESPN locked them up to suppress fighter pay, but I mean, obviously they're gregarious. That's why they got the commentating jobs, but that's, I mean, this is where we are. So they're taking a very anti-labor stance right now.
I agree with you there.
All right, Craig, video of Mike Perry's manager, Abraham Kawa, comparing Perry to Conor McGregor and saying that Perry is such a star. He's a white guy that can use the N-word. Made its rounds on Twitter this week. Craig, is this guy just lacking self-awareness, or is there, you know, some hashtag Black Lives Matter stuff here? Should he be taking the task for this?
It's so painful. Like, he came into the UFC, everyone a finish. He gets 2 finish wins. He's 6-6 in the UFC. He's not that great. I mean, he'll knock people out. He'll get into good fights, enjoyable fights. He's a fun guy to watch. And he's a personality, and when he talks, people listen. But it's for the majority of it's for the wrong reasons. And yeah, you could tell me, oh, well, he beat Paul Felder. Well, Paul Felder broke his arm early in that fight, and it was a really close fight regardless. Like, if you look at why Cal was saying this, let's look at Mike Perry's record. Let's have fun. Let's deep dive this. So Hyun Yu Lim, he knocks out. He knocks out Hot Chocolate Danny Roberts. He loses to Alan Joban. He beats Jake Ellenberger, who was over the hill. He beats Alex Reyes, who comes in on short notice. Loses to Ponzinibbio, loses to Griffin. Beats Felder by split. Loses to Cerrone by submission. Beats over the hill Alex Oliveira. Loses split to Luque. Gets knocked out by Jeff Neal. Well, that was predictable. Okay, so who's he going to fight next? Oh, Mickey Gall, that's 6-2. Mickey Gall is a decent fighter. Mickey Gall's not a great fighter. A lot of people recognize him from the names that he's fought. He lost to Diego Sanchez. He lost to Randy Brown. He fought Sage Northcutt. He fought Chick Magnet Punk. There's your reference to Chick Magnet Punk. But if you watched Mickey Gall's last fight, go ahead.
I was just chalking up the Chick Magnet Punk reference.
Okay, thank you.
If you're going to count my son in references, I'm counting your CM Punk ones.
Thanks, Dad. All right, so if you look at Mickey Gall's last fight, he fought Salim Tuhari, and a lot of people might forget about that fight because it wasn't a big name. It was one of the worst fights ever. It sucks so bad. Salim Tuhari isn't in the UFC anymore, had the best chest piece of a tattoo, but it was a terrible fight. So why is Kawa saying something like this? To drum up interest for a fight that not many people are really going to care about. And if I'm a pick a man, and I am a pick a man, I would pick Mickey Gall to beat Mike Perry. Mike Perry's jiu-jitsu is not good. He's way too wild. And Mickey Gall, as long as he doesn't get caught, he can easily beat Mike Perry.
Yeah, I'm going to take a little bit different approach because I'm going to focus on Kawa in this one because he's the guy that said it. So for me, I do think he's lacking a little bit of self-awareness. I do not think there's more to it in the fact that, and again, this is no excuse for poor racial behavior, but, you know, the Kawa family, if you will, they represent a lot of African-American fighters. So, I mean, not that you can't represent African-American fighters and still exploit them. My point is in saying this is that him saying something like that and taking pride in the fact that a client that he represents can use the N-word while being a white guy, I don't think it's self-awareness. I think that he's just so overcome with greed and desire to promote a fighter of his. And I don't want to just completely cloak him in the with a a cape of greed, but I'm just saying he's just so hell-bent on marketing Mike Perry that he's just grasping at straws. He's like, guess what? This guy can even say the N-word. He's a white guy. All right? I mean, I would be interested to see the guy who shot that film was Will Harris. I'd be interested to see what Will Harris said to him after the camera stopped rolling. I mean, in fairness to Will, you got to let the camera roll and let the guy say it so that it's yours. And let him, you know, dig himself a grave. But I'd be wondering that once the camera stopped rolling, what he said. But yeah, I just think that he's trying to promote Perry. He's trying to steer into his zaniness, and that was just a very clunky way to do it.
Mike Perry opened as a -150 favorite, and probably a half hour later, the line sat and it's sitting roughly at -290. That's so messed up. That's wild. Mickey Gall +120. And then you double up those odds, and now he's sitting at +240. This is insane. This is a bizarro world. Maybe I'm just an absolute wild man, and I don't know what I'm talking about, but give me, oh, Mickey, you're so fine. You're so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Mickey. All right.
Let me tell you what doesn't exist. Early stoppage memes. And when they start to exist, double up is going to be the first one. Should exist. Let's get going out there.
Come on. Hashtag Fight Nighter Nation. Let's make it happen. All right, let's continue on. John, the lioness may have chased her last gazelle. You wrote that. That's very cheesy. Let's put that on on Fight Night Picks memes as well. She's talking retirement. And Dana's alternating between saying that he's pissed off because they're building a whole division for her to saying, well, she certainly has the money to do it. So what's the scoop here? Do you think retirement is true and just for Amanda Nunes, or will she live to fight another day?
First of all, a little bit of inside baseball here. I have read plenty of Craig Allen cheesy lines without divulging the fact that they were written by him. And the first chance this kid has to throw me under the bus, he does it. So listen, let's talk about Amanda Nunes. I think she wants a break. I think she wants to be a mom. I think she wants to, you know, go through the whole process of the child being born in the first year, 2 years of the child's life. I just think that, so do I think that her retirement is true in the sense that, and we're going to talk about a couple kind of retirements here. Do I think her retirement is true in the sense that she's going to retire and never fight again? No. Do I think her retirement is true in the sense that she's like, I'm done fighting, quote unquote, indefinitely, and don't wait around for me. Don't start booking fights because of me. Don't wonder when I'm coming back. I'm not Ronda. I'm not someone that's just kind of hanging out and we'll see when she feels like doing it again. For the foreseeable future, like GSP, go ahead and figure it out without me. I'll let you know if I have interest again. As far as Dana, on the one hand, being upset because he's building a division for her, dude, these divisions have been in existence for a while. Why are you just now getting around to building them? A. And B, this whole thing, if she certainly has the money to do it, Dana loves when someone retires to remind you of how much money they've made as UFC fighters. I don't know what he thinks that's relative to. Is it relative to other athletes who retire and how much money they've made? Is it relative to active UFC fighters? But he loves to sell that UFC American dream of someday you can retire like Amanda Nunes, rich. I don't know that she's as rich as Dana portrays her to be. What does it take to retire in Dana's mind? Right. So if she's a millionaire, she could retire. There are people that are going to retire and never make $1 million. So, yeah, I do think it's a little bit of spin here by Dana. But I think we'll see the lioness chasing gazelles again, but not for the foreseeable future. I bet she either has she'll have a 3-year-old for sure before she gets back in the cage, at least a 2-year-old.
Yeah. OK, I'm just going to do something here quick live on air. Yeah, hello, Joe Silva. We got to coax Amanda Nunes out of retirement. Say whatever you have in your little black book. We need it. We need Amanda Nunes back. We're building two divisions around her. Not one, but two. Okay, so what do you do? If Amanda Nunes is out, do you make Irene Aldana and Holly Holm? Like, is that an interim title fight now? What do you do there? I don't know what you do. And as far as featherweight's concerned, should you just have a trilogy of bouts between Felicia Spencer and Megan Anderson? Because that's all there is there, really. I mean, who else do you have? Zara Farron, Norma Dumont? You don't have a whole lot. So Do I think that Amanda Nunes is truly retired? No, I agree with you. Take a year, take two, take whatever you want. She's earned it. Really, she has. She's one of the best fighters of all time. But yeah, we'll see her back. The whole part about Dana trying to, you know, really get one last one in there. Oh yeah, hey, we made you so much money. I don't really think she cares about that right now at all.
So I'll put you on the spot. Fine. If you're Joe Silva, what do you say to Amanda Nunes to get her to come out of retirement? Now, you're Joe Silva now, not Craig Allen.
Remember that you're time? Joe Silva. Okay. This is the perfect question that I wasn't ready for. YouTube commenters came after me and they said underneath our prediction video for Felicia Spencer and Amanda Nunes, maybe some of you are out there listening or watching right now that said this kind of stuff, that threw that kind of smoke at me and said, remember that time Amanda Nunes lost to Kat Zingano? Remember how Amanda Nunes gassed out in those fights? It's probably what Mr. Silva would say. Hey, you know, you gassed out against Kat Zingano. We're going to try and lure her back from Bellator. Make that fight. We're going to make that fight. Or maybe demons of Ronda Rousey passed, even though she beat her up quite bad. She's beat every current former champion of bantamweight and featherweight. Honestly, I don't know. But maybe you try and entice her with another Kat Zingano fight. Yeah, I think
if the stories of Joe Silva, if the hashtag Joe Silva stories are true, I think he just goes and tells her things he can't even do. He's going to just goes up and goes, listen, I'm just going to erase you from the record books altogether. I'm going to take your name out of you. It's like you never existed. He really strong arms her. Listen, I'm going to propose something to the UFC that I've been talking about for a long time. And then we'll move on. But
cross promotion fights, never going to happen.
Never going to happen. Let's talk about Tough for a second. When you watch Tough, your belief is that, hear me out, I know you don't watch Tough. If you did, when one watches Tough, the belief is that the person that wins Tough is the, pardon the pun, toughest guy or gal in the tournament, right? So here's my belief on Tough Forever, and I'm going to explain to you how this, what this has to do with Amanda Nunes. If you picked guys from an office building, just random guys that work in an office
building. I do this every day at work. Continue.
Hold on. And you said all 12 of you guys are going to be in Tough, right? Someone has to win, right? That guy is then deemed the winner of Tough. If Tough 28 was a bunch of guys from an office building, someone's the winner, right? What I thought never made sense to me is that there's such in the star-making business that for me, when you have a lack of stars, pick four or five and give them the old Hagler, Hearns, Leonard, Duran treatment. Have everybody fight everybody. So the first thing that I do is I say, okay, Megan Anderson and Felicia Spencer have already fought. I put Jermaine Duran to me in there. I put Holly Holm in there. And everybody just keeps fighting everybody. They're rematching each other. They're like, and then you build this as a modern day, you know, four kings that they talked about back then. And you say, like, they could have done it with Misha Tate, Ronda, back in the day. They're missing the boat when they think they have to have one. One is always going to let you down. Have four. Use the top of the division that way.
What about the rankings, John, the official UFC rankings? You have to take those into consideration. Come on.
That's fine. Make it the top four. That's my point. Just have them fight each other. All right, Craig.
All right.
Listen, Craig, the fans sure are going crazy for this smaller cage. But Dana, who, I mean, is this the date? This must be the Dana edition of Early Stoppage. I know he was on with the Schmo, but man, everything seems to be going through Dana this week. Dana says it's just an illusion in terms of the smaller cage bringing more action. First off, do you believe him? And secondly, what's the play in him saying that? If you don't believe him,
the plane saying that is, hey, the UAE threw a bunch of money at us to have fights in Abu Dhabi. So that's going to be a regular size cage. I'm just going to say that it's going to be normal. Everything's normal. They're going to get a normal show. You're going to get the same amount of finishes when you watch it on TV. Hey, enjoy my fights this summer. If you look at the stats, the finish rate's gone up 7% with the smaller cage. If you've watched the cards, they've been more exciting. I bring it up all the time on the regional scene. I've seen 18-foot cages, and that's absolute madness, especially at heavyweight, which I'm looking forward to this weekend with Blades and Volkov. I think that's awesome being in a smaller cage. The numbers, I've seen it on certain websites where they say that the cage is actually 44% smaller with the extra 5 feet less. to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. That just, that math doesn't make sense. But still, what do I equate Dana with the smaller cage and then saying this? Like, what does it mean to me? Do I believe him? No, because it's factually incorrect. And what's the play in saying it? Hey, we've got these big cards. We got an influx of money. I'm just going to try and say this to pump the tires of where we're going to go, because they go over there, what, once a year now? They go to the Middle East or so. So, mm-hmm. you know, you have to make them think that they're going to get the same product that they're getting right now in Vegas at the Apex facility.
I agree with that. I'll take it a step further. I think that the reason why you don't downplay the bigger cage is because the bigger cage looks better aesthetically in the arena. So the reason why you just don't go to a smaller cage is that now if you're in these big arenas like MGM Grand or T-Mobile or whatever, and you put a smaller cage in there, if it's like you said, 44% smaller, and you're in the cheap seats, you're like, why am I even coming here if the cage is small and I can barely see the action? Even if it's more action, I can't see it. So I think that it's a better look in a live event with a bigger cage, and you can't just say, hey, guess what? Anytime we roll this bigger cage out, sorry, you're not going to get a lot of action. You gotta say to the fans, there's no difference. It's just one of those things. It's like saying that, you know, the dimensions of a ballpark change whether or not home runs go out of the park. It does, but you don't want people to think that, or then all the fans will be saying, well, move the fences in, right?
Yeah, just make it softball rules. So let's keep it up with Mr. Dana White, and he spoke out this week on the Schmozone podcast, and he gave his Mount Rushmore of the UFC, but this was fighter-wise. It was Hoyce Gracie, Amanda Nunes, John Jones, and Chuck Liddell. One, do you agree with this Mount Rushmore? And secondly, how loaded of an answer is this?
It's immensely loaded because obviously people were left off for certain reasons. And here's my thing with this Mount Rushmore. You have to concede what this Mount Rushmore is all about and what your criteria is, right? So if your criteria is that someone was a pioneer like Hoyce Gracie, then you can't put Amanda Nunes in there because Ronda Rousey was the pioneer, right? Even though Nunes was better, because there was a lot of fighters better than Hoyce Gracie, right? He's not the best fighter of all time. He was the first. If you're saying that John Jones should be, why would you have two 205-pound champions? Obviously, one of them is more relevant. Yes, Chuck Liddell made, you know, he was a huge crossover star. I would argue that a lot of that came from Randy Couture and Tito Ortiz as well. So had he, you know, I don't know that Chuck Liddell would have been as famous knocking out Babalu Sobral, knocking out Vernon White. I think that Tito had a lot to do with it. I'll never put Tito on a Mount Rushmore. So, no, I don't agree with this Mount Rushmore simply because the criteria is all over the map. I think it's loaded because the reason why you don't put George St. Pierre on there, the reason why you don't put Anderson Silva on there. Demetrius Johnson on there is pretty much when you're being asked. Right now he's in kind of negotiations with Anderson Silva. So you can't put, if Anderson Silva were retired, he might put him on there. If Anderson Silva was trying to fight Connor and Pettis and all the, you know, whoever, you got to tell him, hey man, not only can you not have these fights, maybe you're not as good as you once were, you know?
Like when I look at it, I see, okay, so we have one pioneer, Hoyce Gracie, if you can only pick one, you have the best female fighter of all time. You have the pound for pound, probably the best. And then let's sprinkle in the guy that I managed and, you know, really grew the sport. So do I agree with it? I guess. I mean, everybody's going to have their own. I don't have one off the top of my head right now. But for me, yeah, of course, I'd have George St. Pierre in there. And I'd probably drop, I don't know, Liddell, maybe? That's a tough one. But yeah, I do understand kind of where he's going with it. And it is incredibly loaded because I'm stumped for words.
Well, I do. I kind of understand where he's going, but the other case is, well, then how do you not put Connor in there? What's your metric? If your metric is that Chuck grew the sport, did he grow it from when he became big to when he left more than Connor did? Probably not. More than GSP did? Probably not. More than Brock did? Probably not. I mean, there's a lot of people that you could argue led to this success. Dana puts a lot of stock in this whole, we were on our ass. And if not for these two or three things happening, we'd have been in trouble. I think that if Chuck Liddell never existed, it does not change the trajectory of the
Rampage. UFC. Rampage would be there.
Yes, I agree. All right. So I put you on the spot there a little bit. I'm putting you on the spot even more this week in sparring sessions. Craig, Dana had his say. Now let's have ours. If he wants to choose amongst the fighters, let's choose amongst the non-fighters. Who do you think the Mount Rushmore of non-fighters in the UFC should be? And then the more important question is, and I guess we'll get to this, should Dana White be on it?
First pick in the draft, Joe Silva. So now that we've got that out of the way, let's get into it.
Listen, you better pick Joe Silva or he'll berate your ass.
He's going to come after me. All right. So you look at the early days of the UFC, and I'm going to compare it to Dana White's pick on the Schmo Zone podcast. You have to have one pioneer. So who do you pick? Are we going with Horian Gracie? Are we going to go with the used car salesman, Mr. Art? Are we going to go with Campbell McLaren? I'm going to pick Campbell McLaren. Do you agree with this one?
Wow.
Do you think that's a good one? No. Okay, that's fair. So Campbell McLaren is on my list. Are the Fertitta brothers one person or are they two?
I'll give you. Well, it's Mount Rushmore. So I'll give you both.
Okay, so that's one then, the Fertitta brothers. So Campbell McLaren, Fertitta brothers. Now this is tough. I'm going to go with, did they have to work directly for the UFC? Or could they have been absorbed and then, like, never did anything for the UFC?
It's up to you.
We're going with Saki Kibara from Pride.
Okay.
So we're going there because we have an awesome video library and there was an influx of talent. And then if I had to go with one more person, apologies. I'm stumped. I want to, you get into yours and I'll come up with a fourth.
Okay. So far yours is Campbell McLaren.
Yep.
The Fertitta brothers.
Yep.
And the Pride guy.
Yep.
It's quite an interesting list you have. All right, I'm going to give you guys a quick history lesson while Craig goes through his thing. Three guys pretty much started the UFC. It was Art Davies' concept in terms of the octagon and all that stuff. It was Horian Gracie's idea of how to put, like, Horian Gracie took care of, like, the fighting part of it. Art Davies came up with the concept. Campbell McLaren's the one that got them on pay-per-view. That's the role
that he's on my list.
All right, fair enough. This is my list. I don't know that you're going to love it, but it's my list. Art Davey for the idea. Lorenzo Fertitta alone, because Lorenzo Fertitta was on the Nevada State Athletic Commission before he bought the UFC. And I think that it was his relationships with the Nevada State Athletic Commission that led to the UFC being sanctioned moving down the road. Mike Goldberg. Because I think the sound of the UFC was very key to what made the UFC very special. And lastly, John McCarthy, because he was the one who sort of instituted the rules. He was, like, in a lot of ways, the face of the UFC. But he was like, let's get it on. He didn't. I mean, it depends. In the early days, I don't know that referees were treated the same way they are now. So he very much had to do with the rules and all that stuff. So I'm going to go with – that's my Mount Rushmore. Art Davey, Lorenzo Fertitta, Mike Goldberg, and John McCarthy.
Then I'll split the Fertitta brothers. I have four. I would argue as well, and I don't have stats to back this up, and I think that you bring up a really interesting point with Mike Goldberg, because the split with UFC was less than amicable. But what about his longtime broadcast partner? What about Joe Rogan? How many eyes does that guy bring in now? I would think it would be quite a bit. I mean, if he's getting so much money from Spotify for his podcast, but that's just due in part to the large amount of success he's had over a very long amount of time. But I would think that at least you'd get, and it's probably not a marginal amount of listeners from that actually watch the UFC when he's on there, that might buy the pay-per-views. And he's at least attracting, you know, more eyes to the sport than maybe Mike did. But Mike was there too. Early on, it's real shame on how they kind of capped the career of Mike Goldberg with the UFC.
Joe Rogan in the UFC is very much a chicken and egg situation, in the sense that, is Rogan famous because of Fear Factor, or is he famous because of the UFC? and which of those led to led to the trajectory of his podcast. So that's an interesting
weird side note, because I'm a weird guy. When I was a kid, did not know Joe Rogan from the UFC. I knew him from news radio.
He was great on news radio. But yeah, that's because of Dave Foley, let's be honest. We both know your connection.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, yeah, you got to have a comedian run on the show. Exactly.
Dave Foley, underrated comedian of all time. Genius. Dave Foley, ready for this? Dave Foley is one of the only people, I think, who could have played Jason Bateman's character in Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Would have been great in that.
Yeah.
All right, Craig, let's hit the speed bag. I got some doozies for you this week. I got some doozies. Five, because I bet that you were asking yourself when I did that intro, what does Dana White's, what are some of these questions? What? We're going to talk about what? Here's hitting the speed bag. Number one, Craig, day in the life. You could spend the day in the life of either Dana White or George St. Pierre. Who do you choose?
Dana White all day.
Number two, what would you rather eat? You have no idea where this is going.
Don't say Dana White or George St. Pierre.
Yeah, same question, same answers. What would you rather eat? Cody Garbrandt's hook or the Showtime kick?
Showtime kick did not go Bendo, so I'll go with that.
Yes! That's exactly the answer I was going to give. Number three, in their primes, who wins, DC or Randy Couture?
Oh, DC.
Number four, why does Dana White's kid look like Joe Rogan?
You'd have to ask, don't ask me, don't ask Dana, maybe ask Joe Silva.
You should probably.
But that's a question for Dana White's wife.
That's fair. Number five, let's stick with Rogan. If Rogan asks you to be part of his crew right now, are you joining?
No.
It's tough. It's tough in that crew right now.
I
Brendan Schaub, Ari Shaffir, Chris D'Elia, it ain't the greatest crew to be in right now.
No, I listen
on Spotify.
I listen to some of those podcasts too. Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm gonna leave that where it is. I'm gonna say no.
Hold on,
I won't elaborate.
I'm gonna throw a curveball at you because I was thinking about this the other day. So now let's compare Joe Rogan and Howard Stern. Howard Stern got very famous and his show became hugely popular off his staff and also the Whack Pack. So he would have his staff who he'd bring in and he would make fun of them and all this. And then he would have the Whack Pack, which is like Jeff the Drunk and all these like weird people. If Joe Rogan were such a genius that he surrounded himself with just insane people and just sat back and reaped the benefits of their insanity, I would almost be impressed, because that's kind of what Howard Stern did. He surrounded himself with a bunch of misfits and sort of played into their flaws and turned it into a spectacular show. Listen, I got to either say that about Rogan or he's an enabler.
I'm going to go
some rough guys.
I'm going to go a weird way and then I'm going to end with what you just said. So
not a
Stern guy. In my second car. My second car, I had satellite radio. Growing up, we had some satellite radio. So I would occasionally listen to Howard Stern. It's good. It's not totally my cup of tea, but it's good. But from what I understand and from what I've listened to, it's changed a lot from when he was doing it, like in the 80s to now. It's a totally different show just due to changing times. Do they still have the Whack Pack on or even some of those characters? Do they?
They do.
Like, I listened to my favorite thing on Howard Stern, because I like 90s baseball, was when he had Lenny Dykstra on, because that guy is a nut. But
side note on Lenny Dykstra, the greatest story I've heard in the last 2 weeks. Lenny Dykstra sued somebody for defamation, and the judge said, "Your character is so horrible that you cannot be defamed." The greatest thing I've heard in the last couple of weeks. Judge said, "Your character is so bad you cannot be defamed."
Like when the Phillies were playing the Jays in, what was that, 92?
Yeah.
And Dykstra with the bubble gum and the chewing tobacco and the giant arms just knocking them out of the park. Big.
And Mitch Williams, John Kruk, that was a team, man.
I was born in 94, but Mitch Williams with that long windup and Joe Carter, touch them all, Joe. That's awesome stuff. Anyway, transitioning from that, Howard Stern, you know, the model worked from so well. The format's changed a little bit, has huge guests on, whatever. Joe Rogan, it's huge guests, but you're right. There are those same cast of characters. The Dillius, Schaubs, Kreischer, Segura, Shafir, whoever.
Callen, yeah.
Yeah, there's a little bit of controversy there now. And I think, you know, you talk about enabling this and that. And I watched a couple of videos here where, you know, Brendan Schaub kind of puppy dogs off the answer that Joe Rogan gives him. It's just the same thing. Like, it'd be like if you said, Craig, who's, or if you said, sorry, my Mount Rushmore is Art Davey, Horian Gracie, Campbell McLaren, and Dana White. And then I said, oh man, that's my Mount Rushmore. And then for this question, I said the exact same thing every single time. It might be a good show. People might like it because you're my dad and all, but I don't think people would want to hear that. So I think it's a little bit of enabling on his part, and you need to look no further than Twitter today, because it is a firestorm today.
I think he steers into it a little bit. I mean, he always kind of gets Eddie Bravo going. He'll get Brendan Schaub. He knows the right buttons to push. So I think he's a little bit more of a puppet master than he may get credit for. All right, let's move on.
Let's move on. And this is a segment that we're dusting off. It's been a while since we had the chance to dive into the over-under segment of the show. And while it's an oldie, it's a goodie. So what we do in this segment, we look ahead at some of the more important stats. And we've got this weekend's UFC Vegas 3 card coming up. And we apply the old over-under number where we see fit. These aren't actual odds. We're just having fun. So, John, I'm going to start here. Clay Guida and Jim Miller debuted in the UFC in 2006 and 2008, respectively. And I spent a lot of time in the octagon. Jim Miller, if I'm not mistaken, is in the top five or six of total octagon time, and he's going to tie Donald Cerrone's total fight record this weekend at 35. Clay Guida has had some insane ones. Over-under on the number of combined UFC bouts these guys have left at 2.5. Are you going over or under?
I'm going over for sure. If I look at these two guys, I feel like they have two different reasons why they're continuing to fight. Jim Miller, to me, seems like the kind of guy who owns a gym and continues to fight to keep himself relevant enough to bring people into the gym. Clay Guida seems like the kind of guy that likes to go to appearances and have fun and be out there and likes being a part of the UFC. So for that reason, I don't see in the foreseeable future a reason for them to stop fighting. It's not like either one of them is on long losing streaks. It's not like either one of them is like, I don't know. I would set the over of, on just Guida having 2.5 more fights. So yeah, I'm going over for both just because I think Guida would do it.
All right. You don't like my question. That's fine. You could have said that at the start. You could have prefaced it there. For me, it's an over, but Clay Guida's last win is in 2019. You know who that win was over, right?
I don't. Give it to me.
Are you kidding me? The greatest lightweight of all time, arguably.
Diego Sanchez?
Oh, my gosh. BJ Penn. Give me a
That's
break.
Right.
BJ Penn.
Oh, my
and
God.
And then he lost to Jim Miller. That was his last fight. Jim Miller's fought some really good names even lately. He's kind of like that perfect 15 to 20 gatekeeper where if you beat Jim Miller, you've got a rough road ahead, which Roosevelt Roberts does this weekend. I think Jim Miller's got, another 2-3 fights left. I think Clay Guida, if he loses, maybe one more, but there's no shame for the Carpenter to hang him up.
If Miller's a true gatekeeper in the sense that you would expect him to like be hanging around it, like, you know, in pro wrestling where the guys go to learn pro wrestling. It's like, give Jim Miller a call. If the kid can hang with Miller, he can go. He's like a gatekeeper in that
Where's
sense.
Dan Miller? Bring Dan Miller in.
Call the Miller brothers in. We got somebody we got to figure out. All right, Craig, Curtis Blaydes has been a takedown machine, averaging one every 2 minutes and 26 seconds. Over under at 5. How many will he land against Volkov this weekend?
He's only going to need 3 to finish him. I'm going to take the under.
That is an interesting way to answer that. Not so much that he couldn't get 5, but he won't need them.
So Matt and I talked about this in the prediction videos. Volkov's stats, his takedown accuracy and defense are both above 70%, but he's never fought a guy like Curtis Blaydes. Curtis Blaydes is so good at taking people down. And the other stat that I said, because a lot of people, if you're this far into the podcast, you know where I'm going. Curtis Blaydes' takedown defense is 25%. It's terrible. But who's taking Curtis Blaydes down? Nobody. So they're flukes. Like, his accuracy is so high. He does it so often. He's going to be able to take Volkov down with these. If Czech Congo could take Volkov down in Bellator, Curtis Blaydes can do it right now in the UFC.
I'll take the over. I think that I don't think he gets the finish. I think it's obviously it's scheduled for five. It at least goes three. So I'm going to give him three in the first and one each in the second and third.
All right, John. Shane Burgos, Josh Emmett's probably going to take the honors this fight of the night. It's a co-main event. Great striking, but for what it's worth, if we set the over-under at 32, and this might seem like a weird number, what are you going with for number of body punches landed by Burgos, over or under 32?
I'm going under, and I'm going under because I not Shane Burgos' ability nor willingness to work the body. I just think, and I will tell you this as well, I like Shane Burgos' head movement, right? So keeping his hands up are not his only way to keep that head safe. I just think that Josh Emmett is enough of a headhunter that if Burgos tries to go too much to the body, Emmett will at least make him pay. I'm not saying he'll knock him out, but Burgos will say this kid can – he has to take Emmett's power. He has to pay it some respect, and I think that that will keep him away from the body.
35-year-old kid at featherweight, Josh Emmett. 32 being the number, it's tough. Like, Shane Burgos, yeah, I mean, Makwan Amirkhani had a little bit of success in his last fight, but Burgos landed in the body all day and tired him right out. But before that, it was Cub Swanson, and he only landed 13% of 147. Total strikes were body shots. So, you know, putting everything together, that's kind of where I just came up with a random number of 32. I'm going to take the... I'm going to take the under because he's not going to kick him to the body, but he is going to at least attack it to set stuff up, you know, around the head area, the old cranium.
Here's how you end up being a 35-year-old kid. When I was 35, he was 28. So he was a kid then, he's a kid now. All right, Craig, here's one out of left field. This weekend's card features two former Bellator champs, as Lyman Good and Alexander Volkov, sported that crimson and gold in their former tenures. Setting the over-under at 0.5. Do you think anyone on this weekend's card will become a Bellator champ in the future? And if over, who?
Yeah, I'm going to say there's one juicy over that makes me want to say over, but then I'm going to bring up who the champion is that they would have to beat. If the over is again, one, because I think there's one here that could. It's Raquel Pennington. There's not a bantamweight division in Bellator. There's flyweight. They have had fights at atomweight. They had Rebecca Brigman fighting at atomweight. If you've never heard of that name, Google it. They've had fights at strawweight. They've had fights at bantamweight. But it's featherweight and flyweight. So if she fights at featherweight, she has to beat the likes of Julia Budd and the new champion, Chris Cyborg. I don't think she beats Cyborg. But could I see Raquel Pennington at 10-8, even with a win over Marion Renault ending up in Bellator? Yes, I could. Unfortunately, I'll take the under. But if you're going to bet the over, that's probably your one to go with, your safe pick.
All right, just so I understand this question correctly, and for all you young podcasters out there, the way that I read that was the way that a professional does it, not throw the person that wrote it under the bus. I won't say who wrote it. I'll just say that's how you read it when you're a professional.
Fair enough. So
if I'm understanding this question correctly, it's, is there anyone on this card other than Lyman Good and Alexander Volkov who could be a Bellator champion in the future? Yes or
no? That would be too easy. Curtis Blaydes could beat Ryan Bader tomorrow. The question is, it's 0.5. Do you think anyone from this card, this weekend's card, will become
Champion. Not could be. Yeah, you're right.
It's an issue when the person that's reading the question doesn't read it, and then their reading comprehension isn't to, you know, like a grade six level,
right?
Then they struggle.
That's fair. You know what, the championship pedigree on this card outside of the UFC to me is with the women. And again, we talked about what's the likelihood of flyweights going over to Bellator? You know, like Roxanne Modafferi, Lauren Murphy could be an out of UFC champion. Courtney Casey could be. Tisha Torres could be. I mean, there's a lot of women on this card, which is interesting because didn't Sherdog just had, this is insane to me. I'm venturing all over the place. Sherdog just had a stat about how only 11% of the UFC fights have been women. And this is this like 40% of the fights on this card.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Will be, if I had to pick somebody, Roosevelt Roberts would be my guy that would leave UFC and go win a belt in Bellator. So I say over. There you go.
Yeah, I guess. Roosevelt Roberts reminds me a lot of Jason Jackson. Tons of promise. The UFC missed the boat there at 170. He's a future champion with Bellator.
You know what's funny? You know who has Bellator champion written all over them? Bilal Muhammad. He just, his name, he just seems like, if you look at him, he looks like a Bellator champion.
He's had two fights in Bellator.
But he looks like a champion of that. So, yeah. And he's fighting the former champion. So if he beats Lyman Good, is he like the uncrowned interim champion of Bellator?
That's how it works.
All right, Craig. You know, this week from start to conversation, my heart's not in it. And I'll explain why. We'll give shouts to MMA Reddit. We'll start the conversation. Craig, let's talk about this business in one championship. In the same press release, your boy Chatri said he had an influx of $70 million. And he's also cutting staff by 20%, which was so crazy. Even Dana White said it was crazy because we had to get one more Dana White mention in here. It's the Dana White show. So here's the question. What's going on in one championship and what does the future hold?
It's a dumpster fire. It's an, it doesn't, none of it makes, you can say like, if you're constantly saying how good you are, there's got to be, you know, some skeletons in your closet. You like that. You're never going to say anything negative. Like the UFC is not going to come out today and say, you know what? Joe Silva was wrong. He shouldn't have said those mean things to those fighters. They're not going to do it. So what one championship did was a classic sales tactic, and it was a little smoke and mirrors. John, if I'm going to, you know, bring you in for a performance review, and maybe you're lacking here and there a little bit, how am I going to do it? I'm going to open it up. I'm going to say, hey, John, you know what? Love the podcast. We're doing some really good work. But you know something? You're tardy to meetings. But you pick it up, and I think, you know, moving forward, big bump in salary, we can do some really good things this year. That's exactly
what you were
going to
bring up my reading comprehension. I thought that was going to be the...
it's you hit them with a positive, then a negative, you end on a positive. That's how you do it. That's like classic old-timey psychology. That's what you do. So one championship in this press release. We're getting $70 million. But don't look at the part where we're laying off 20% or getting rid of 20% of our employees. And they're going to try and spin it in a positive light, whatever. The one thing that I nearly tweeted and then I didn't because I don't have enough knowledge about the situation. But so they made that trade or whatever you want to call it. Ben Askren, Demetrius Johnson. They bring Demetrius Johnson in. Well, what's Demetrius Johnson good at other than fighting? He's a big Twitch guy. They bring him in, $50 million into esports. One championship's going to be a world leader in esports. So they have a tournament or two. That's what your $50 million went into? You had like a tournament or two. I know 2 weeks ago or a week ago, they teased a one championship PS5 release because, you know, UFC was supposed to release UFC 4 at the PS5 release. It didn't really happen. But now there's a beta out there with EA Sports. So one championship does that. Ooh, we really got the tiger by the tail there. One championship, one, UFC zero. But it's just, it's a lot of misinformation by those guys. It really is. To say that you're getting billions of views, I could say that right now. Fight Night Picks, man, we are on top of the world. We're getting billions of views. A quarter of MMA fans are watching Fight Night Picks. Do I have any stats to back that up? In me saying it, no. But you, the listener or the viewer, could go on my page and see that I'm not getting a billion viewers. So it's the question here, what's going on with one championship? It's a lot of misinformation. It's been like that for a long time. And what does the future hold? Okay, Cosmo Alessandre knocked out Sage Northcutt, world-class kickboxer. What does one championship do as soon as Cosmo Alessandre says that, hey, I'm not getting paid my keep, and kind of goes along the same lines of Masvidal and John Jones? One championship shows a highlight reel of Nicky Holsken knocking out Cosmo Alessandre. Like, what are you doing? Get your head out from under the sand and do the right thing. Like, I love the product. I love the fights. I love a lot of the fighters. There are good things, but there's also bad things. So what does the future hold? It's weird and it's murky. And I hope they can keep growing the sport in Asia. But what does the future hold? I don't know. I mean, they signed a deal with TNT, and now I'm going on a rant here. They signed a deal with TNT, and then they wanted to have shows in the States, but we haven't had shows in the States. And we've had, you know, there's WADA issues. There's what's the whole story behind weight cutting? Because we don't really have the full scope of what they do with weight cutting, because they say they do hydration testing, this and that, but it's all kind of behind closed doors and fighters are pretty coy about it. And then you have an announcement like this where we've got 70 million, we're cutting staff. So it looks like they're taking a bit of a lean approach. Hopefully it works. Hopefully, and this is an old sports adage, and I'm really going off the deep end here, but the Buffalo Sabres cut their GM, they cut all their scouting department, they cut amateur coaches, or not amateur coaches, but not NHL coaches, but AHL coaches. And what they did was, it looked like they cut the fat, but they also trimmed some of the muscle. Hopefully one championship doesn't have to cut off too much of the muscle, and they're just trimming fat at this point. But I hope the best for them. You never want to see anybody lose their jobs. B, you don't want to see a promotion fold. Hopefully they can figure it out, but they do a lot of odd things.
They do, and I don't want to oversimplify this, but I'll just say this. Number one, actions speak louder than words, and people have been very critical of the World Series of Fighting, and which then became the PFL, and all their business dealings and all their stuff. Listen, here's what I know about the PFL. They got Kevin Hart coming in. Here's what I know about the PFL. They promise $1 million checks. They deliver them, and they get cashed. So at least they're doing what they're saying they're going to be doing. Now, is that a horrible business model? Could they be, you know, severely in the red that we don't know about? Perhaps. But what I'll say about one that bothers me is they seem to keep moving the goalpost, and they seem to keep trying to like reinvent what makes them relevant. Well, it's the weight cutting. Well, it's this. Well, it's that. We're going to do this. They're trying so many different things to convince me that they're relevant and viable that, you know, on the one hand, you're giving me these statistics which are like blow everything else out of the water. Like, this is how many people consume our product, and this is how many people this and that and the other. If that's the case, then you should have the resources to buy your way through your obstacles. Meaning, if you need to get more viewership in the States, you should be able to pay $1.30 on the dollar. You should be able to pay more to say, you know what, you know, we're not in the States, but we're going to overpay TNT to make sure they put our product on, right? And we're going to do all this stuff. And I just don't see it. I just don't see, like, I see fighters going there and just wasting away and not being marketed properly. If you have all this, you know, all these fans that are viewing and all this money that you have coming in. Dude, when I first read that press release, I thought it was a mistake, and that was meant for investors. I thought it was something that was supposed to go out to investors and say, hey, guess what? We got 70 million coming in. We're laying some people off. Things are getting better. So invest in us. We're a good company for you to have a stake in. But it went out publicly, and then everybody was like, why would you include these two things? It only makes sense if you're talking business with people that you would talk about how much money's coming in and who you're laying off. So I don't see it. Again, we talk about actions speak louder than words for a promotion that seems to have it all together, like they claim. And seems to be on the cutting edge and ahead of things and willing to invest in all these different things. It's just not showing up. So, you know, it's not like Demetrius Johnson and Eddie Alvarez are going, I've never been happier. You know, they're kind of just blowing in the wind a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm looking at the press release right now. First thing from Hua Fun Te, group president of One Championship, stated, I'm thrilled to announce that One Championship closed another round of funding a few weeks ago with existing institutional investors as well as a new institutional investor. I'm full of gratitude for the strong vote of confidence amidst the worst global economic crisis in 100 years. With nine figures of cash in the balance sheet and a streamlined organization, One Championship looks forward to continuing to light our fans around the world with more heroes and new experiences for many years to come. So you've got 70 million and 346 million. Why can't you, when things get going again, you know, they're taking the old adage, go big or go home with some of their events. Like, they're bringing in, like, again, Demetrius Johnson, Shinya Aoki, Eddie Alvarez, the list goes on, Vitor Belfort. And then they've got the kickboxing, and they've got MMA, and they've got Muay Thai, and they're going to all these different countries. And it's just like, let's spend all the money we can. And if we don't make it, Oh, well.
Like, dude, not for nothing.
It's short-term gains versus long-term gains. And it just like, what's the long-term plan here? Because you can't just keep spending your way to try and make money. That's what a startup does. You guys are already established. You're not a startup. I know you're still going through investing rounds, but we're pretty late in the game to be pulling stuff like this. And they've extended themselves so far that it reminds me of Felix Leiter. And I pulled up the full quote from, what was it? Casino Royale, one of my favorite James Bond movies, where he turns to James Bond. He goes, "Listen, I'm bleeding chips." I just wanted to say that. That's my favorite part of the movie. But yeah, they're in a tough spot, kind of like old Felix in Casino Royale.
Yeah, not, and
James Bond to step in.
If you're that healthy financially, dude, you could overpay to get on Fight Pass if you wanted to. I mean, I know the UFC is a direct competitor of yours, but you got Rich Franklin, you got Mitch Tate. It just seems like they do all these things where it's like, oh, Rich Franklin's a name, let's bring him in. I mean, and listen, in fairness to them, Rich Franklin and Misha Tate are two really, really great people to bring in. But what fruit is that bearing? It's not like, other than being associated with one championship, they're like brand ambassadors for one championship. Like, I don't even know what they do.
The other thing I have, this is like, so you're in it. Like, you do this with companies, you look at them. What's my main thing? One championship, MMA, or fighting. We could even say fighting, but MMA. But we have kickboxing, but we have Muay Thai, but we have esports, but we have a new season of The Apprentice, where we're going to have a TV show. And I get it, like, okay, with the UFC. So you had UFC, Ultimate Fighter, you have Dana White's Contender Series, you have an Apex facility, you have Performance Institutes, you have all of these things. But you got to remember, they started in 1993, and they slowly but surely built their way up. And when they had The Ultimate Fighter, it was broadcast in the States, North America, everywhere. And who knew if it was going to be a hit? And then he had Bonner and Griffin, craziness, whatever. And you build. But it's not like they just went out there and really went for the jugular. Like the UFC, and mind you, they had to grow the sport first. So, you know, early adapter. And then one championship comes up on that curve. And they're probably, I mean, they've been in business for a while. But you have to imagine they're closer to the top. And then it goes down. Well, they're in this weird spot where they just keep throwing darts at a board, kind of waiting for one to hit.
Right, but you, in my opinion, you got, like, let's use Fight Night Picks as an example, right? All the things that you're adding to this channel, that doesn't mean the picks start showing up late, right? That you make your picks, they show up.
Well, they did this week, but yeah.
This is a bad example. But my point is, you don't take away from the you dance with the, you know, the girl you came with. And yep. I think that they're trying to do all these other things, and it's taking away focus from the fighting. And I think that that's what they're missing. They're in this game for fighting. And I think that they're kind of
And you bring up a really good point. And that, like, it's weird. You look at one championship and look at YouTube channels. Look at Good Mythical Morning. Healthy, wholesome, great channel. What do? They do their Good Mythical Morning videos. And they do that. Then they have Good Mythical More. Now they have a cooking channel. Then they have, they had TV shows. And they had all of this different stuff. But all the way along, even if some of those things underperformed or didn't perform up to expectations, they kept doing Good Mythical Morning. And they kept going to that bread and butter spot where they knew people like that. And with one, yeah, they're still putting on fights. But they're really stretching themselves thin in trying to push into these different markets, where I'm sure there's an appetite for a one championship apprentice season. Would I watch it? If I found it, I probably would. Would I watch their esports stuff? Well, personally, I'm not into it, but I could see how somebody would. But it's just these major investments and what comes next? So you have one season of The Apprentice. Do you have another if it goes well? You put more money into that? Esports, you get $50 million into it, but only a few tournaments. So do we keep going with that, or do we just cut our losses and start fresh somewhere else? It's just, it's murky. Murky waters. I'm bleeding chips.
I hear you. And lastly, I'll just say, if you look at the ESPN, I mean, they've done a lot of things over the years, but they never stopped doing SportsCenter. They never stopped putting focus on it, and they never stopped making it a big deal, no matter what else they did. I mean, they would have people come on to SportsCenter to get them over. It wasn't like SportsCenter needed Stephen A. Smith necessarily. He would go on there and be like, okay, wow, Stephen A. Smith's not supposed to be. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that they need to figure out who they are, or maybe remember what they were, and get focused back on that, and find some partnerships within that, not try and be so different. All right, guys, there you have it. The latest episode of Early Stoppage on Fight Night Picks is in the books. Be sure and comment under the video to let us know what you'd like to see from the show here on YouTube, but also on iTunes and Spotify. The comments were interesting this week. We found out Craig and I's relationship, which is I am his father, much like, if he's Luke Skywalker, apparently I'm Darth Vader. I'll keep the Star Wars analogies running from earlier. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FFP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
Yeah, mom's after the alimony payments, bud.
Well, I'm moving to Florida then. I'm going in the bubble with the NBA players. All right, guys, we'll see you next week. Peace.